Well, hey everyone, welcome to Mosaic. If we haven't met before, my name is Bill and I'm a pastor here. And I love to torture you guys, right? Because we all love math, and math is an acronym. We know what the acronym stands for. It stands for mental abuse to humans, right? That is a fact, an absolute fact. But hey, today we're going to try to delve into this. So if you don't know much of my story, I studied math in college. I thought I was going to become a high school math teacher, and now I like to preach, so let's try to combine the two. But my thing with math is it really taught me so much about failure. It taught me so much about failure because when you get into like the higher level math, the only way to succeed is through failure. The only way. And so even I was thinking about it this week, like how math kind of reprogrammed my brain, the way that I see life, the way that I kind of see things. And I often wonder is maybe our fear of math or our hatred for math more rooted in our fear of failure than it is actually a fear of math? Because for me, like when we're talking about faith, I think those two things are so connected. Because for me, the road of faith is paved in failure, right? And I just wonder, like, are we fearing failure so much that it's hard for us to actually embrace a life of faith? I love what it says in Jeremiah chapter 8. It says, this is what the Lord says. You know, if a man falls down, he gets back up. And if a man goes the wrong way, he turns around and comes back. Proverbs chapter 24 says, the righteous may fall seven times, but still get up. The wicked will stumble into trouble. See, the good thing about failing is we learn from it. And as humans, we actually learn more through our failures than we do through our success. Psalm 119 says, it was good for me to be afflicted so that I could learn your decrees. Theodore Roosevelt said, the only man who never makes a mistake is the man who never does anything. And so today, I want to throw us into this beautiful realm of failure. This beautiful realm of math, right? And I know I could just see the excitement in your eyes about math, that we're talking about math today. So for me, have you guys ever had that really, the crazy teacher? One person? So in college, I had this insane professor. He was amazing. I loved him so much. He was the nerdiest guy you'll ever meet in your entire life. He talked like Professor Frink from the Simpsons. You know what I'm talking about? No? But anyway, so one year I dressed up for Halloween as this professor. His name was Dr. Brown. And so this is me dressed up as Dr. Brown. Come on. How good is that? I wish I had a picture of Dr. Brown. I was trying to find it, but I couldn't find a picture of Dr. Brown. He was awesome. And he would talk in class, and he just loved math, and he loved creation. He would always be in class and say, well, you know, class, the world around us, you see math everywhere, and math is everywhere, and it's proof of God. And the biggest proof of it all is pineapples. And we're sitting in class like, pineapples? And so then he takes out a pineapple, and he says, yeah, pineapples. Pineapples is one of the most beautiful things that really show us. It teaches us so much about nature. It teaches us so much about reality. And he said, see, pineapples, they have all these little sort of circles, these diamonds on them. And if you count going up the spiral, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then if you go the other way, there's another spiral, right? And so if you count that way, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So you got 8 going one way and 13 going another. And he says, this is proof that math runs the world, right? Beyonce was wrong. Girls don't run the world. Math runs the world. So you're like, well, I don't get it. Like, what does the number 8 and the number 13 have to do with anything, right? And so it has everything to do with math. Has everything to do with something called the Fibonacci sequence. Has anyone learned the Fibonacci sequence in school? I heard one yes. So the Fibonacci sequence is basically, it's a sequence of numbers. Start with 1, then you have another 1, then you have 2, then you have 3. Does anyone see the pattern yet? What's the next number? 5. 8, 13. Man, someone knows the Fibonacci sequence. Let's keep going. What's the next one? What's the next one? What's the next one? Next. You can use your calculators. I mean, I'm not grading it or anything. 144. What's the next one? Nope. 233. Someone said it. 233. 84 plus, or 89 plus 144. So we see this is the Fibonacci sequence. And what's crazy kind of about the Fibonacci sequence, and the reason why Dr. Brown was sort of obsessed with it, is this number sequence is found so often in nature. It's found in the spiral of a pineapple. It's found twice in the spiral of a pineapple. We see it all over in the petals of flowers. We see tons of one-petal flowers. We see, there's not many two-petal flowers, there's a few, but we see a bunch of three petals. Then we see a bunch of 5, then we see a bunch of 8, then we see a bunch of 13, then we see, I gotta cheat, 21, and then 34. And we see this pattern show up so much in nature. Bananas, if you cut a banana is actually 3 segments. It's kind of a gross picture, isn't it? Gives me the creeps. Okay, and then we see it in apples. Apples are 5 segments. And so we see this number show up so often in the world around us. And that's why Dr. Brown was obsessed with the Fibonacci sequence. He was obsessed with pineapples. And to him, when he saw a pineapple, he saw God. And so he began to explain to us kind of why this is the case. And so I'm really going to geek out on you guys today. So for all you people that hate math, the next little bit is going to be hard to engage. But I'll say this, right? When it's those moments where you kind of get lost, you kind of like, I don't understand, step into that. Because I think in life what ends up happening is typically when we don't understand something, we disengage, we pull back. And a big part of that is because we don't want to feel stupid, we don't want to feel dumb, we don't want to fail. So what I'll say is, instead of pulling back, instead of disengaging, let's press into that. Let's press into that feeling and kind of ask, why am I feeling that? Why am I feeling that? So he began to explain the Fibonacci sequence, and he said, it's like a golden rectangle. So a golden rectangle is basically a rectangle that you can segment, where if you were gonna create a square out of it, so equal sides, let's say you sliced it right there, then what you have is you have a square, and then you have another golden rectangle here. So then you can segment that so that there's a square, and then there's another golden rectangle. And we could keep doing that, and we see this picture here. So you could keep segmenting it, where you keep creating squares and golden rectangles, squares and golden rectangles, right? And so we end up with this, and if you had a computer program, you could actually keep doing this for infinity. You could do it forever and ever and ever, because this ratio of this side to this side, when you chop it in half, it keeps creating more and more rectangles. And so then Dr. Brown, he begins to kind of tell us, he's like, okay, let's do a proof of that. Who has ever done a proof in school? A math proof? A few of us. So I'm gonna attempt something that I don't think has ever been done before. I Googled it, and no pastor has ever attempted to do a math proof during a sermon before. Maybe there's a reason for that, right? We'll find out. So enjoy some math proofs. So I love proofs. I think that they're really unique, really awesome. So I want to take you through one. So here we go. Let's say this is a length right here. And you know how in math we're obsessed with using letters for numbers? So give me a letter. What letter could this be? A. Okay, what letter is this one? Don't say B.
J.
Someone else last service said J. All right, then what's this one? Give me a R. Cool. And so in order for this golden triangle to actually be a golden triangle, what happens is your ratio from this length of the rectangle to that rectangle, so J over A, that's a fraction, that's a ratio, so if you divided that, you get a number, is going to be equal to A over R. So if you divided those two numbers together, you're going to get the same number every time. So, math, we love using one specific letter all the time. We'll say this is equal to what? What's the letter math is obsessed with? X. Yeah, you guys are with me. X. And so now let's kind of look at this. Let's see if we could possibly solve for X, right? I can see yawning happening already. So let's solve for X. I know this is kind of nerdy, but I have a point. Trust me. So J, if this is J, and J is the length of that side, what is this length right here? It's going to be A, right? So then we know that J is actually equal to A plus R. So then we could rewrite this as A plus R over A equals A over R equals X. And then we could actually take that number, right, that little part right there, and we could separate it out to A over A plus R over A equals, did I put R over R? Wow. There we go. Equals A over R, which equals X. A over A, any number divided by itself is what?
One.
Man, you guys paid attention. Plus R over A equals A over R, which is also equal to this number X. So then we could kind of take that because we have this fraction here, right? And it's kind of flipped. And so the cool thing about fractions, really cool thing, you can tell I love math. So if you have like 1 over 2, let's say that's our fraction, that could be the same thing as 1 over 1 over 2, right? Or sorry, not 1 over 2, 2 over 1 because it's flipped. So that's 1 over 2 equals 0.5. 2 over 1 equals 2, and then 1 over 2 equals 0.5. So it gives us the same thing, right? And if that, this is where I'm going to lose everyone. If that's equal to X, then this could actually be written as 1 plus 1 over X equals X. And then if we multiply this throughout by X, right? Let's multiply both sides by X. We end up with X plus 1 equals X squared. And then if we move, because we know algebra, we can move that to that side. We subtract it off. So then 0 equals x squared minus x minus 1. I told you I was going to lose everyone there. Right? So now we have something called the quadratic equation. The cool thing about the quadratic equation is we can change this, right? We can change this. So if we have, let's say we have something like this. We have ax squared plus bx plus 1 equals 0. If we could get it into that format, we could change it. So we have it in that format, so we could change it now to what is minus b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac all over 2a. Yeah, okay. Someone's studying math. So now we could kind of take this and plug that in, right? When we take that and we plug it in, I'll just do it quickly. I'm getting lost all of a sudden. My brain went flat. So we have 1 plus or minus the square root of 5 all over 2. And that number right there is going to be equal to 1.618033 and a bunch of random numbers. And now why do I go through a full proof, right? Why do that? Why not just tell you guys, all right, I'm going to give you this, and eventually it's going to lead us to this number right here. Why not just tell you guys that? Because I think that proofs to me, like math proofs, it tells me so much about life. It tells me so much about the way I live my life, because first and foremost, when I'm doing math proofs, right, like you have to get to the place where you see things through different eyes. Because the thing is, and I feel like even in faith, but we see things so, we put our blinders on, and we don't think outside of the box at all, because it's like someone told me to think this way, and I have to think that way. And we never look at things from a different angle, we never look at things from a different perspective. But the thing about the Fibonacci sequence and this golden triangle is sometimes it takes a lot of creativity to get to the answer. And the other thing with proofs is you got to have a deep knowledge of a lot of different things. And so in order to actually get to this point where we get to what that number is, we got to know algebra, we got to know geometry, and we got to actually trust that whoever came up with this weird, crazy, random thing is right. And there has to be some type of a proof out there that says that that is correct all the time, 100% of the time. And then lastly, for me, proofs is the only way to actually solve a proof is through failure, right? The only way if you would have given me that problem last week, no, like, it would have taken me a few days to figure out if I didn't cheat and access Google like I did this week, right? And so the thing is the only way to come to the answer is through failure. And so when I was in college, the thing that always instilled the most fear in me is when the professor would give us one question for homework. Is he would say, answer question 14. And the reason why I feared it so much is because you would never be able to answer the question 9 times out of 10. You just couldn't do it because it was so hard. And they did it on purpose to us because they wanted us to fail. They wanted us to fail so that what we're bringing to class is our failure at it, so we could talk through it. So we could say, oh, this is where you messed up. This is where you missed it. This and that, right? It's because for us as humans, they're tapping into who we are, is that we learn more through our failures than we do through our successes. And when I was in college, I almost quit. Right? I was a sophomore, and I was in Calculus 2, and I was, like, failing it really bad, like a 30%. And I'd never really failed a class in my life, except in high school I failed Spanish because I sat next to a cute girl and I didn't pay attention at all. And so for me, this idea of failure was so foreign because I was like, I thought I was good at this. And now if I'm failing this class my sophomore year, how am I going to survive to my senior year? And I've told this story before, but I prayed. I prayed to God, and I said, God, I'm going to work as hard as I can. And if I get a D in this class, it means that I'm supposed to change my major. Because I thought to myself, well, if I say F, I could just give up and be like, oh, well, God told me to quit math. And so I prayed really hard, and I was like, God. And then I took the final, did halfway decent on the final. The professor must have curved the grades or something, and I ended up with a B in the class, and now I'm a pastor. So I often wonder if maybe I need to work on my pronunciation skills with my prayers. Give me a D. Maybe you thought I said B. I don't know. But for me, if I'm sitting down next to someone who's studying, who's thinking about their major, I would encourage anyone to take math, because I think it taught me so much about failure. And I think our culture and our society, we fear failure so much. We fear our problems so much. We don't see failure as an opportunity to succeed. And I wonder that, for me, like math, it didn't teach me to be a problem solver, right? It taught me to embrace the problems. And that every problem, every solution actually has an infinite number of problems connected to it. And I began to think, man, life is not a problem to be solved. Life is actually a problem to be embraced. I love what it says in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. It says, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. See, I think the modern era did wonders for technology. But I think it did real damage to us psychologically, because we began to see life as a problem to be solved. We began to see faith as a problem to be solved. And I just wonder, like, man, the gospel, is it supposed to actually solve our problems? Or is it supposed to be used to display the beauty of our problems? See, Life is a lot less like a problem to be solved and more like a proof. See, that's why I wanted to take you guys through it, because this is what I mean by that. So like we have our Fibonacci sequence, right? So let's plug it into here and let's see what happens. Let's see if that ratio equals each other. So we have a side over a side. So if we have 1 divided by 1, what does that give me?
1.
It gives me 1. Let's do the next one. 2 divided by 1. What is that?
2.
2. Is that kind of anywhere close to that number? I mean, it kind of is, right? It's off by 0.4. It's off by 0.6. But it's still not anywhere close. So let's take the next one. 3 divided by 2. What is that? 1.5. What's 5 divided by 3? You can use a calculator. 1.666667. If you round up. So what's, let's say 8 over 5. What's 8 over 5?
1.6.
What's the other decimal points? 1.6 what? Oh, is it? 1.600. So let's do this one right here. Let's do 233 divided by 144. What is that? 1.6180. What comes after that? 5. Do you kind of see what's happening there? So the bigger the number gets here, so this number goes on forever, right? It never has a pattern. It never repeats. It goes on random numbers for infinity. But this number, somehow the Fibonacci sequence is taking us towards it. And that's the thing about life, is I feel like with life so often, we're worried here, right? We're worried in the moment. We're worried we have this problem in front of us and I got to find a solution. I got this problem, I got to find a solution. But our solution is so singular focused in the present that we forget where this is actually taking us, where this is headed. And so if we see it as more of a problem, is where is it headed? Where is it going, right? Is it taking us somewhere? And for me, the place that it's taking us, it's towards something beautiful. And so if we saw our problems less as this isolated thing in the moment, if we saw our failures less as this anxiety in the moment, and more, who am I becoming because of this? Where is this taking me? Where am I going? If it was less focused on the problem and more focused on the proof, where is God taking me in this moment through this failure? If we were able to actually think about those things, and even in your mind and in your heart, bring up what those things are, those failures, those problems, and now take a step back. Take a step back and say, where can this take me? How can God use this to change me? How can God use this to allow me to be the person that I should be and that I want to be and that he wants me to be? Because what we see is that when we actually begin to embrace that, we see that life is actually a beautiful arrangement of infinite problems. And I love what Jesus says in the book of Matthew. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? Whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. Do we really believe that? Right? Because we focus so much on the problem for the here and now. But the cross tells us to embrace the sacrifice, right? What Jesus is really saying is, if these problems, if these failures, if they feel like death, it's because they are. They hurt. They're filled with pain, right? But what we find when we truly embrace a life of faith is that through what feels like death inside, new life can be resurrected out of that. I love what Robert Capon says in one of his books talking about the parables of Jesus. He says, Jesus came to raise the dead. He did not come to reward the rewardable, improve the improvable, or correct the correctable. He came simply to be the resurrection and the life of those who will take their stand on a death that he can use instead of a life that he cannot. See, when we begin to actually embrace our failures, when we begin to actually embrace our problems, that is what is leading us towards God, towards the divine. And why did I spend so much time talking about a proof that's leading us to this kind of random number and this Fibonacci sequence that for some reason is leading us towards that other random number? Is because throughout history, since Fibonacci and this golden rectangle, scientists have called this the divine proportion, the divine number, the divine rectangle, because you see this happen all throughout nature. And if you take this rectangle and you kind of create a spiral from it, so you're kind of taking that arm of the square, and if you had a compass, you're just swiping it up, and you do that for all the squares in our golden rectangle, creates kind of a beautiful spiral, right? And this spiral, this ratio, we find this all throughout the world, all through creation. We find it in our DNA, right? We find this ratio in our DNA. We find it in our hands, the ratio, the proportion between the bones and our hands. We find it in art. This is the Parthenon. We find it in the Mona Lisa, right? You see Da Vinci, how he utilizes this divine proportion to create the Mona Lisa. We find it also in the Apple logo, right? Apple uses it. We find it in flowers. You see this spiral of the leaves. We find it in cauliflower, right? Have you ever cut up cauliflower at home? And it's like the outside pieces are giant, and then the pieces at the top are tiny. It's because if you really look at cauliflower, it's just spirals. So it's spiraling, and it's getting smaller and smaller towards the middle. We find it in sunflowers. We see the spiral. We see it in dandelions. Whoop, that's not a dandelion. If you clear all, I think it'll take the words away. Cool. We find it in dandelions. We see it in our faces, right? So the proportions of our face, the curve of our ears. They even say that a lot of times what we perceive as beauty is the divine proportions perfectly on someone's face. We see this in the wind pattern. We see it in shells. And we even find it in our galaxies. See this spiral, these proportions, they're everywhere. They're everywhere if we just open our eyes. And so we're not focused on the singular, right? We're not focused on the number. We're focused on what it looks like for everything. What does it look like for everything? Not just one case, but all cases. And when I see this, to me, it reminds me of Psalm chapter 19. It says, "The heaven declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the ends of the world." Romans chapter 1, verse 20 says, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse." And then Paul is brave enough to put in the book of Colossians, "The Son, Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together." that all of creation is a beautiful arrangement of problems. All of creation is screaming out. And so often we see faith and we look at faith as a problem to be solved. We see it as if I do A, B, C, it's going to equal happiness, right? If I could just believe in Jesus enough, if I could just confess my sins enough, if I can just do all these things, I'm going to be happy. And what do we find? We do those things and we're happy for a moment. But then all of a sudden, when the next problem hits, when the next failure hits, we say, what the heck, God? I thought I did what I was supposed to do. I thought we solved this problem a month ago. I thought we solved this problem a week ago. But it's because we get so focused on solving all the problems that we forget the life that Jesus is calling us to, a life of embracing those problems, embracing those failures. You know, and some problems, they stick with us for just a moment. You know, maybe it's a job that we didn't get. Some problems stick with us for a lifetime, like a thorn in the flesh that never seems to go away. And I wonder if God is saying those things, those problems, maybe those things are exactly what you need to become the person that I can use. Maybe those things are the things that you're going through, and you, if you take a look outside of the problem, outside of the situation, it's going to do something in you. It's going to do something in you that's going to create something beautiful. And even though it feels like death right now, that life is going to come because of it. See, God is not a genie, and so often we treat him like it. And if we just pray hard enough, if we rub the lamp hard enough, then maybe he's going to give us the things that we want. And I don't think God is in the business of taking all our problems away. I think God is in the business of embracing us in the midst of our failures, in the midst of our problems. And that sometimes it feels like a cross, right? And I think we all have crosses that we're bearing. We all have those failures. We all have those things that we're struggling with that feel like it's weighing us down. And it's hard and it's heavy. And the gospel is Jesus is saying, yeah, me too. Me too. And Christ on the cross experiencing sin, our sin, the problems that we're feeling in this moment, the problems that we're experiencing here and now, the failures that are looming in the back of our minds, Jesus is saying, yeah, I know. I felt that. I feel that now. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 says, God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. See, the pattern of God is found in our DNA. It's found in the proportion of our fingers. It's found in the curve of our ears. It's found in pineapples and cauliflower and seashells in the galaxy. Right? And I think so often we see our problems as the end of the world, the end of the universe. But in the scope of it, really, it's just an atom in the midst of an infinite universe. But God still cares. God is still here. He's still present in our pain. He's still present in our failures. He's still present in our problems. And the beauty of the gospel is that God can actually use those things to help you become someone who is stronger. So then when something even harder comes your way, you can see it coming from a mile away and you could say, I know you. I know you. When you see it coming in someone else's life, you can see it from a mile away and you could say, I know you. I know you. See, a life of faith is a life that doesn't have to embrace fear. We don't have to embrace fear because we don't fear failure anymore. We don't fear the problems anymore because we expect them to come. We expect them to come because what they do is our failures and our problems, they do create a little bit of death in us. But what Jesus says is, as those things die in you, I will fill them with life. And I wonder, maybe we need less solutions in our life and more failures. And I know that's hard to hear. And I know that's probably like, man, that stings. But what needs to die in us? What needs to die in us so that Christ could actually fill it with life? In the book of John, Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Then in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, it says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away. Behold, the new has come. Philippians chapter 4 says, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. That's always. Not just in the good, but in the tough. Not just in the solutions, but the problems. Rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Don't be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. I wonder, with Christ at our side, in a community of people who are sitting to our left and our right, who love us dearly, what do we have to fear? What do we have to fear? A life of faith is not a life of fear, because we no longer fear because we're no longer going through it alone. We're no longer bearing our cross alone. Christ is with us if we want him to be with us. He's inviting us into that relationship. And when we do that, when we begin to embrace our problems, when we begin to embrace our failures, when we begin to embrace that junk in our life, what we find is not that they go away, but we're no longer afraid of them. Because we recognize them and we say, you know what? This is going to make me stronger. This is going to make my faith deeper, my faith richer, and my relationship with Christ even stronger and even closer connected to him. So, you're here. We all have problems. We all have failures. We all have that junk. And what I would love to do is I would love to pray. And let's pray that Jesus can actually step into our lives and begin to bear that burden and bear that cross with us. If you would pray with me. God, when we look around, if we truly open our eyes, if we truly open our minds, we will see you everywhere. When we go to the grocery store and when we pick out fruit and vegetables, when we buy flowers for people, when we look at the clouds in the sky, when we look at the curve of our fingerprints, we see an image of the divine. We see an image of what you created. God, in this moment, even though our lives are just a speck in the midst of eternity, it doesn't take away from the realness of this moment, the pain and the hurt and the failures and the problems that every single one of us in this room are feeling right now. And God, for some of us, that cross feels like it's unbearable. And we can't walk. We can't take another step. Jesus, we invite you into our hearts and into our lives so that you can bear that cross with us and say, me too. I know what you're going through. I know what you're feeling. Just know this is going to create something new in you. This is going to create life in you. And even though you don't see it now, even though it feels like death, it's going to create life in your soul. Jesus, we give you our lives today. Give you our hearts. Thank you for the beauty that is all around us. And it's in your name we pray. Amen. Mm-hmm.